Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and this is it. Last day after 24 years, 1 month, and 10 days at Wisconsin Public Radio. I say thank goodness for this network. You say that as well. I've heard from so many of you over the last month. Deepest thanks to all who make it hum every single day. And so many thanks to all of you. I can't respond to all of you. I'm trying, but you have been in touch with me by the hundreds with memories of shows and heartfelt appreciation. I wish everybody could retire from a job and have the kind of send-off that I'm getting, because most of us just walk out the door and that's all she wrote. But you have been very, very kind to me. I have been overwhelmed by human kindness this past month, and I do mean overwhelmed. We even had a therapy. We're having a party all day here, so we're interrupting the party for the broadcast. But it's been, remember that song, Human Kindness Overflowing, and heavens knows we need more of that, so thank you. I've been steeped in the past this week, and so we're going to reminisce the next 2 hours with segments from shows that will always stay with me, people who inspired those in our radio community and beyond, people like Studs Terkel. I was born in Chicago, and Studs was the very best of Chicago. He reminded us of heroism in everyday people. He was a mentor to me, a role model, and was heroic himself. We had a chance to visit him, my husband and brother and I, actually, at his home in Chicago toward the end of his life, and what tales he told. Other voices, Maya Angelou, Senator George McGovern, John McCain, Bob Dole, Ken Burns, and Doris Kearns Goodwin. You didn't think you'd get away from a show on Abraham Lincoln on my last day on the air, right? Did you know he was my favorite president? Did you know that? I'm going to continue reading about him in the years to come. Jane Goodall will talk about David Graybeard, the chimp. My longtime producer is Rhonda Fanning, who's now at KUT in Austin, Texas, where she's a big shot. KP Whaley, station manager in Asheville FM. He's got a heart of gold. And Scotty Myers. I feel like these two guys are my kids. Scotty's doing extraordinary production work at Milwaukee Public Television. Each of them will join us. And we will make sure to take a few listener calls. You're going to make me cry, and I can't cry doing radio, so I'll take a few calls during the course of the hour. If you want to call in now, that would be dandy. 800-486. I'm going to forget the number the last day. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. So I put a picture of Finn next to me so I won't cry because he's coming next Tuesday. And we start the show. Listen, if it weren't for Jack Mitchell, I would not be sitting in this chair having a great retirement party today, because Jack is the forward-thinking, smart director of Wisconsin Public Radio for 21 years. He hired me, almost did. We'll hear that story. He's author of Wisconsin on the Air, 100 Years of Public Broadcasting, and of course, it's a good year to read that book. He has a marvelous background. He was the first employee of NPR, and he developed All Things Considered. And Jack, thanks for hiring me, buddy.
It was a good decision. It worked out pretty well, didn't it?
Almost 25 years.
Yes, I can't believe that.
I know.
It seems like it just happened.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so was it a hard decision for you to make? And you can be honest about it, because, you know, sometimes things happen by chance. It was hard.
Well, it became complicated. I thought it was easy at the beginning that we wanted to hire Kathleen Dunn. She seemed to fit. But then because of affirmative action and other policies, you advertise these jobs. Mm-hmm. And we got some wonderful applicants.
You mean better than I was?
Well,
what the heck?
Apparently not. But it was tough, because we had two or three that I won't mention names, but they could have been good.
Uh-huh.
But we made the choice and went ahead, and it worked out just fine.
Thank you very much for doing that.
That's okay.
It's been, and we both have a love for public radio, but I've heard from so many people, and I'm sure that you did too when you left doing active radio, the importance of this medium, the importance of public radio. I've heard from hundreds of people, Jack, who just cherish what's done here.
Yes, and I have too, of course, and it's nationally as well. I mean, certainly NPR is phenomenal, and other radio stations around the state, around the country. But here in Wisconsin, we do have a unique history, 100 years of this. We invented the whole idea. And then the way we've implemented it here with programs like the Kathleen Dunn Show and some of the other things that are done. We do a lot of local or statewide programming, more than most places. And I think it's it's the values, I think, that appeal to people. It's the, I like to say, and this is not meant to be political, but I guess it is, it's the anti-Trump notion, not so much on policies, but the approach. He's irrational. We try to be rational. He doesn't worry about facts. We kind of care about facts. And so those values that are public radio are the antithesis of what permeates so much of our society now. Mm-hmm. And I think people value that.
And that we listen to them. I know that you and I have talked about, and I kind of lament the fact this is leaving radio in a way. I love the call-in part of this show. I love opening the phone lines and not knowing exactly where we're going with that, but also hearing the expertise and the wisdom and the good hearts of people who are in this radio listening community. They're wonderful.
Yes, they are. And that's I knew that when we went to the call-in, because there are a lot of people who thought this was not a good idea. You got all those dumb people out there. They're going to call in with dumb comments. Well, you get some. You get some. But mostly, the folks that listen to public broadcasting, they're, as you say, good-hearted people, but rational and smart and knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And we can tap all of that. Mm-hmm. And it surprises us what we hear and things that we didn't expect. But that's was, you know, part of the charm of it all is that you get things that you didn't expect. You learn something.
Every day.
It's not all prepared.
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's not prepared. No, a lot of it's a lot of research that goes into mm-hmm. making sure that you're able to present yourself for every show and you know what you're talking about. I never wanted to appear stupid, so I had to do homework. I really did a lot of homework for this show. I mean, when I think about how much I read, it was a lot of reading.
Yeah, you've learned a lot.
I've learned a lot. Too. Yeah, but what a way to live! What mm-hmm. what a job to have to right. be able to read and learn and talk to people about what you've learned, and it happens all day long on the network. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I kind of like it.
yeah, and you made it what it is. You've got all the bureaus and what happened with this whole network. That must make you feel good that you created it.
It does. It right. does. And this program was part of, say, a bigger philosophy of getting out of Madison and having bureaus and offices around the state, reporters around the state doing a major program from Madison, from Milwaukee, just to come with a... That we are not just a Madison service, we're a state service. It's Wisconsin Public Radio, not Madison Public Radio. And
right.
I thought that was really important.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see that has persisted. I left 20 years ago.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. 1997 was my last year. And it's 20 years later, it's still kind of plugging along. In the general direction, not exactly as we started off, but in a general direction,
right.
still doing that. Yes.
Right. And the whole network, you wrote a book about it. We talked about it here on the air not long ago, 100 years.
Yeah,
100 years of this network.
Great book, wasn't it?
It was a great book. One of the best books I read last year.
Yeah, it's supposed to be available everywhere.
I'm sure it is. But that was a wonderful thing to do, to write about the history of this
whole network. Yeah, I enjoyed
that
a lot. I enjoyed writing it probably more than I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
It was fun to try to make sense out of it all.
So when we're off the air, can you tell me who you almost hired, and do you know what happened to those people? Did they go on in radio?
I know what happened to one of them.
Oh, you do?
They're not necessarily happy stories.
Oh, it's not?
No, but...
Oh, okay, well, we'll talk about it.
But, you know...
Well, I worked really hard for 25 years, huh? Do you think I'd last this long?
Yeah, actually, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I didn't doubt that. You fit what we had in mind. I mean, your personal values, your personal interests, your personal just your humanity fit what we had in mind. Mm. So, of course, it would work. Mm.
I remember this vividly. You said during the interview process, if you are at all what you are off the air, on the air, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And you are.
And I think I am.
Yeah, the best people in public broadcasting, or any broadcasting probably, are authentic. You know, take a Larry Mueller, you know, the program just, he's off, that's Larry.
That is Larry.
Yeah, and, you know, Susan Sandberg, takes somebody from way back, that's her.
Marvelous.
That's who she is.
Yeah, marvelous.
And so the best people are who they are. You can't really fake sincerity.
Oh, I think you can.
Some people can. All right.
Somebody will catch you along the line. Thank you for hiring me, really. And thanks for all of your vision for this network, too.
That's been great.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, go for it.
Jack Mitchell, who hired me almost 25 years ago. Well, it was 25 years ago because it was a while before I was on the air, which was wonderful. Oh, we have people who are on the line. I'm going to weave in a few listener calls during the course of the next 2 hours. That's okay, because I love you listeners. You know that. I've traveled with you to Springfield and Washington, and I love the fact that you call and you're engaged, and so I have to say goodbye to you. So let's take a call. Oh, can I see who's calling? Lisa's doing the board for me today. So it is Wallace in... Oh, my gosh. Wallace is 95 years old? Really? Wallace, hello.
Hello. Kathleen, I'm that old coot that called a while back. I'm a World War II veteran.
Oh, Wallace.
I'm be 95 pretty soon, and I want to compliment you. Your pleasant voice made my day every single day that I listened to you. It's wonderful how you handled your program, and I wish you the very best in your retirement and your new venture. Thank you very much.
Oh, Wallace, thank you. You're an inspiration for me. I remember when he called, and my mouth kind of dropped open. And I think he was preceded by somebody who was 92 years old who called, and sharp as could be. That's what happens when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. That's how sharp you can be when you're almost 95 years old. Thank you very much. Another person who lived to, I think he was 95 as well, was Studs Terkel. I did a lot of interviews with Studs. I did his last interview, actually, when he couldn't hear very well, and he was quite elderly, and he couldn't hear any question I asked him at all. I figured, you know, it's Studs Terkel. It doesn't make any difference. Whatever you want to talk about, go to it. And he just did. He waxed eloquently on so many things, and what a mind. And he remembered everything that happened in his extraordinary life. Studs joined us many, many times, and always had, because he elevated the common person, he always had stories. He was a masterful storyteller as well. So I believe that this interview is from 2003. It goes back a bit, December 12th of 2003. One of my favorite people who really inspired me as well, Mr. Studs Terkel. Let's go. I found one of the more moving stories, The Innate Intelligence of Deirdre Merriman.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Deirdre Merriman. Deirdre, in your book. The Irish woman.
Oh, Deirdre Merriman.
Yes.
Oh, my God, how did I find her?
I don't know.
You know. That's how I work. I work improvisationally. I like jazz, so in a sense, I improvise. And I heard about this woman living in one of those flats, you know, uptown is an area in Chicago, of a mixture of people at the way station. And this particular building has people on welfare, a couple of apartments or welfare, some who barely have it. And there she is. I can't go in, says the manager. She'll have to come down. And she comes down in her wheelchair. She's paraplegic. She was beaten up by, she was an alcoholic for years and years, beaten up by a boyfriend who broke her spine.
Mm.
And so she's in this wheelchair, comes down as though she were the queen. And she welcomes me up to her apartment. And then she got all kinds of books, everything from Stephen King to James Joyce. And she says, I'm still going to make it. She's come out of alcoholism, and she's helping people. But the community is a rough community, seemingly rough, but it isn't rough, you see. Like she's walking down the street, she's riding down the street in a wheelchair, you know, and some guy tried to steal her purse. She said, what, are you crazy or something? And just the people start rushing out, and they rush after the guy. And these are other poor people. They help, they point out there's a communal feeling, even in the midst of all the depredation. And she wants to write. And she, at the time, Mike Royko, you're Mike Royko.
Yes, I know him.
The
yes.
columnist known in Chicago. He and I were close friends.
Mm.
And so... She says, I want to write, but I want to have the kind of job that you and Royko got, only I'll be better. And the fact that she is writing, she's taking a course at a community college here at night in her wheelchair, and the teacher says, you're better at this than I am.
Ooh.
She's a natural-born storyteller, and in the midst of all the horrors she's telling, I burst out laughing because she's very funny. And she's very feisty and witty. And so, in a sense, she's a case in point.
Yes, she is. You've been through some tough times. Why don't you give up hope? Well,
I think the reason I have hope is, I don't know, maybe I'm screwy. But I think all the books I've done, you've named several of them at the very beginning. Every one, no matter what the theme, deals with, has a subtext, that there's a native intelligence. There's innate intelligence in the ordinary, I hate the word ordinary because it's patronizing, in the non-celebrated American. There's an innate intelligence, an innate sense of decency.
Tell me about you and Mahalia Jackson. I love that story.
The which one?
Mahalia Jackson.
The Mahalia Jackson story?
Yes.
Oh, well, you know, as you can tell, I talk a lot. I have a big mouth, and I at times get in trouble. And during the McCarthy, well, I was years ago, when TV was brand new, Chicago was the center of free programs. TV was only on 6 to 10 at night. I'm talking about 1949, 1950. There were Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, a beautiful program with puppets and a genius working them, Bert Chilstrom. Dave Garraway, you heard of Dave Garraway?
Of course, yes, yes.
He became the very first face ever seen on daytime TV. The third was my program, Studs Place. And they were considered pioneer programs. And I was hot stuff as far as the profession is called. They called me hot property. But it was McCarthy days. And so I spoke out a lot, and I signed petitions. I always say I never met a petition I didn't like. As a result of which, I got in trouble with NBC. And they said, you know, commies are behind these petitions, like anti-lynching and anti-Jim Crow and civil rights. And he says, don't you know communists behind those petitions? I says, suppose communists come out against cancer. Do we have to come out for cancer? You know? And he didn't think it was very funny. In any event, I got canned. Mm. And so before that, I had a radio program that played opera and jazz and folk music. And I played records of Mahalia Jackson a lot, a singer no one ever heard about. But I heard that voice, and it just mesmerized me. I even remember the song, Move On Up a Little Higher, old 10-inch, the old 10-inch records. And then after I got blacklisted, I was out of commission for a while. And Mahalia is now internationally known. And she remembered me as the white guy who played all her records. And so she's offered a program on CBS Network Radio. She's with one condition, that I am the host of the show. And they agreed reluctantly. Well, during the show, it was very easy, by the way. We'd ad lib it, and I'd introduce the songs and warm up the audience. It was a live audience. Once a week on Friday nights, about 400 people in the house, in the Wrigley Building, CBS. Mm. And then during the third week or so, another guy comes in from New York, and this is from CBS, and he gives me a loyalty oath to sign.
Ooh.
I said, well, of course I won't sign that thing. I'm an American. I'm doing a loyalty oath. And we're arguing on stage. This is before the audience comes in. Mahalia hears, she's going toward the piano to rehearse our new theme song. Move on, his eye is on the sparrow. And I remember these things in detail. Certain moments stick out. And then she heard this arguing. She says, is that what I think it is, baby? I says, yeah. Are you going to sign it? I said, well, of course not. Okay, let's rehearse. And so the guy said, well, just a minute, Miss Jackson. Mr. Turkle has to sign it because it's from headquarters, New York. As Mahalia said, listen, you tell who Mr. What's-his-name that if they fire Studs Terkel, to hire another Mahalia Jackson. And you know what happened, Kathleen? Nothing happened.
Mm.
He vanished. Mm. He disappeared. Mahalia said no to the official word when the official word is wrong. In other words, Mahalia at that moment showed more guts, more Americanism, and little finger than General Sarnoff, head of NBC, or Paley, head of CBS, are all the agencies put together.
I'm Kathleen Dunn with you for an hour and a half more on the Ideas Network. I'm retiring today, having a great party in the office. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for arranging so many things, music and pictures from years ago. It's It's been an overwhelming time. I wanted to be sure to say goodbye to listeners, too, and I'd like to. We're hearing from some favorite guests over the course of 24 years and also taking some phone calls as well and talking to producers who I worked with for many years. So I wanted to say goodbye to some of you and want you to know that I'm saying goodbye to all of you. Marsha in Oshkosh is calling in. Hi, Marsha.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you today?
Okay, Marsha. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine. I just wanted to tell you that I don't want to make you cry because I don't want to cry. You are one of the main reasons that I became a sustaining donor. I was telling the producer that I drive around, and not only have I had doing errands with you on, I have had driveway moments, but then I've also had Target moments and Aldi moments and Fleet Farm moments. And you have... driving down the road, trying to write down some books that when your guests are on that they've said would something we should be reading. I've done that, and I have become a much more intelligent, wise person because of your show. And I just wanted to thank you so very much. We moved here to Wisconsin about 29 years ago, and when we leave and come back, the number one thing we do is the minute we get in range, it's NPR back on.
Oh, thank you, Marsha. Thanks so much for the call. I feel the same way about the show. I have learned so much. And there have been so many moments when I just wanted to, you can't have dead air in radio, but I just wanted to stop the conversation because one of the guests would say something that you just wanted to sit there and think about.
Absolutely. And I have learned more about President Lincoln than I ever knew existed.
No kidding. Did you hear that on my show?
Yes.
I love the guy.
Yes. So I don't want to take any more of your time.
Thanks, Marsha.
I'm sure there's hundreds of calls behind
you.
But you have a great retirement.
Thanks, Marsha.
And just know that you'll be missed.
Thank you, Marsha. I'll miss being here. And John will go to in Washington, D.C. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. I just wanted to call just to thank you for the wonderful public service that you've given to me and to all of your listeners for all these years. You know, I've followed you when I was living in Wisconsin, and then I moved to Vermont, and now I'm in Washington, and I've followed you as I've moved across the country, and I just want to thank you for your heart and for your all the wonderful conversations and the topics that you bring to your listeners. And as somebody who does a lot of LGBTQ advocacy work, I wanted to thank you too for all that you've done to open people's minds and hearts to marginalized peoples within their communities. It really means a lot to have you as an ally as we work for equality. So I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm trying not to cry.
Oh, John,
for
you
all
made
that
me cry
that
too.
You've done,
thank
and
you.
Wish you all the best and send
oh,
you my
John.
Love.
Thank you, John, and to you too, and for all that you've done. I've known you for a long time. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah. And we'll take phone calls. We got a lot going on the next hour and a half. Rhonda Fanning is going to be joining me shortly. We've had many, many years together, many trips to different places with listeners. We'll talk about some of that. And we'll take more phone calls as well. If you don't mind just staying on hold a wee bit, because we have a lineup of senators we want to hear, too. I thought it important that we hear from Senator John McCain and Senator George McGovern also coming up. And Rhonda is coming up to talk about some of her favorite experiences. And so it's a full hour and a half. Our phone number, if you'd like to join and I can say goodbye to you, is 800-486-8655.
I'm Rhonda Fanning, and I had the honor of being Kathleen's producer from 2006 to 2013. I didn't have a whole lot of public radio experience when I applied at WPR, but I think Kathleen and I clicked for a couple of reasons. One, we both had our first on-air gig for the college radio station at the University of Iowa. And probably more importantly, I had a degree in library science. As a surprise to probably no one, Kathleen loves books, libraries, and librarians.
And we talk books this hour with Nancy Pearl. That's all I have to say, and it's going to be a great hour. Rhonda is a librarian, and Chrissy works in a library over the weekend, and I go to libraries all the time, so this is a great honor. But
not much got Kathleen more excited than talking to a librarian or bookseller. Well, maybe a few things.
So I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may fade, my dog will
As you well know, we love our dogs, and we love our cats, and we love our pets, and I've been looking forward to doing this show for a long time. Actually, our guest... Tell us the story. You're SA Dog of the Day, Lori.
Yeah, I want her to be Dog of the Day every day, and every day when I walk into doggy daycare, her name is not on the board, it breaks my heart.
If we could talk dogs, it was a good day. If I could get a dog into the studio, it was the best day.
That Madigan does a little speaking, is that correct?
She does indeed. Maddie, can you talk? Woof.
Yay!
As a cat owner, I often gave Kathleen a hard time about the lack of feline coverage on the show. But of course, I found a way.
On a very cold winter night in 1988, someone put a small kitten into a book slot at a library in Spencer, Iowa. The kitten lived subsequently in the library for some 19 years and was adopted by the library, was adopted by the town, and really the story touched the entire world. We'll talk
Kathleen's
about
love for her work showed every day, and many of our listeners shared her intellectual curiosity about the world. After 7 years, it was hard saying goodbye to someone who taught me so much about presenting good journalism with credibility, accuracy, and fairness. Kathleen represents some of the best of public radio, and I'm so fortunate to have worked with her.
Lily Tomlin is with us. Rhonda Fanning is leaving this show next week. I'm going to miss her desperately. The one person she always wanted to book for a show is Lily Tomlin. Can you believe it? And so here she is.
At least I made Rhonda's last week.
Isn't that something? I mean, it's just such... And here it is, her last week, and she got to book you.
I'm glad. Well, I'm glad. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad, too.
I was glad, too, but also sad to say goodbye. But I know I'm not alone in saying, Kathleen, we'll miss you dearly, too.
Will there ever be another Earth? How's that for a topic for the hour? We're going to go to the oceans this hour of the program. Our guest is Dr. Ellen Prager, a marine scientist. Mondays at 9, all things political. Our guest this hour is Professor Daryl Paul, associate professor of political science. We're going to be talking about space this hour of the program, and we should have a highly interesting and lively program. After we had booked this show, we discovered yesterday that NASA had set a news conference on an astrobiology discovery that's going to take place, the news conference, this afternoon. So we'll talk about... It's not E.T. that they've discovered extraterrestrial life in terms of a being of some kind. I think we can rule that out. This hour, we are celebrating the 50th birthday of Motown Records.
From the Texas Standard Studios in Austin, I'm Rhonda Fanning for the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Oh, Rhonda Fanning, I miss her, but you know what? I don't have to miss her now because she's here. Rhonda!
Hey, Kathleen.
What a piece you put together. You know how to package a piece for radio. That was so lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had a lot of fun last week going through all of our old shows, but I just would go off in a rabbit hole and all of a sudden 5 hours would have passed and I'd listen to, you know, gone through 10 different shows. It was hard to choose from the 7 years that I was there.
I'm so glad you were here. I had such a good time with you. And we should tell people, you're at KUT, you're a big shot. People will want to know what's happened to people who were here for so long. You are the person behind this incredible show, the Afternoon Texas Standard Show now. Tell us what you're doing.
Well, I helped create it. It's a statewide news magazine, the National News Show of Texas. It's called the Texas Standard. It's a partnership with all of the... We're based out of KUT, which is the NPR affiliate in Austin, but we have our four other major partners, which is KUT, KRA in Dallas, Houston Public Media in Houston, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. So we are kind of the launching pad of their content, and we create our own content, and it's really turned into something. We've just turned 2 years old not too long ago, but, you know, it was hard to leave your program, but when you get a chance to create an entirely new public radio show, you kind of... I had to take the chance and do it, so here I am.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. You and KP and Scotty are all going to join me, and I think of all of you as my kids in a way that I'm just so proud of what you've done, and you were such an amazingly creative producer. I remember so many shows. We don't have time to play all of it, but the day you got the people who discovered the Richard III body at the University of Leicester was a great show, and I can't believe you got them all sitting around a table at the university. It was wonderful.
The King in the Car Park. That was something. Yeah, it took a while to arrange because of the time difference and everything. And, you know, they were kind of busy because they were making
right.
some news. But
yeah, they were.
but they seemed really enthusiastic. And I guess my enthusiasm and your enthusiasm kind of showed. And so they sat down and gave WPR like their own hour, their own like Richard III history lesson. It was pretty amazing.
It was amazing. And we did a lot of shows. We shared a love of space. We did some really wonderful shows. And I didn't even know what the heck we were talking about. You read this stuff about quantum physics and the light years away and what this all meant, and I didn't know what it meant. I understood it on the air the minute we were talking about it, but we both shared a great enthusiasm for otherworldly things.
That's right. And I think that was the challenge of getting that to translate to our listeners and to us. I mean, for us to right. have that understanding is to find the right person who has that kind of brain but can present it in a way that your average non, you know, astrophysicists can understand.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was always a challenge, but it was a fun challenge. I enjoyed that challenge.
Yeah, I did too. Lisa and Samantha here have put together this incredible slideshow, and you are in so many of the pictures, Rhonda. It's just, and you have this look on your face. It's typical Rhonda. Oh, there's a Rhonda. I remember those shots of you. You were so serious and really engaged in everything. I wish you could see them. Maybe we'll
I'm sad I'm missing the party.
Well, and it's going on all day. I had to do a show in between the time we're having a party. We had a therapy. You will appreciate this. It wasn't a cat, but we had a therapy dog come in not only yesterday.
I am shocked.
And we have one come in today, too. He's going to be 14 years old tomorrow. Jasper.
That's amazing. Yeah,
it was amazing.
It was when I was going through the WPR archives looking for, like, highlights. I would do keywords like space. And when I hit dogs, it was like the Kathleen Dunn Show, like 130 returns. And then, like, Larry, like 40 returns. But you were number one.
Tell us, do the lead up for this, because you found this clip, which I think is pretty extraordinary. It's a story of transformation, and I'm surprised when I heard it that I didn't dump the caller because of what he initially said. But yeah, I don't know where you found this clip. This is a dog story. I'll let you tell a cat story, too.
Okay.
But this is a dog story that you found.
Yeah, I mean, it was early on when I started producing for you, and I was, you know, I don't do math, but I estimated, you know, the 7 years that I was at with your show, we probably did about 3,500 shows together. And if you think, you know, maybe we take 10, 15 calls a show, that's a lot of callers. But out of all of those, I mean, so many have stuck with me over the years, but this one I just have never forgotten. And I just was dead silent when he was talking. There were lines open and they were ringing, but I wasn't. I just let the phones continue to ring because I had to know where this story was going. It was an author. I think he was a poet, and I think he teaches at the University of Houston, actually.
Oh.
And he was writing about his partner who had died of AIDS and this dog that helped him, like, live through that loss. And so then this gentleman called in and started to tell his story.
He stays outside in the winter. He loves it. I had him for about 6 years. I think it was about the second or third year I had him. I would take water out to him when it was real cold out, and he'd knock it over. And this went on and on. Finally, I got fed up when he knocked the water over right away after I gave him water. And I smacked him upside his head, which I'm ashamed of, but I did it. And when I walked away, I slipped and fell, and that dog's nose was underneath my armpit as fast as you could to lift me up. And I cried after that, that I was mean to him, and he had so much love for me, and it taught me a real big lesson in life.
Right. They don't hold grudges.
Hmm. Whew. That one raised tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
We took some great trips, Rhonda. Did we take trips or what? Those Springfield trips, that Washington, the Gettysburg trip. I was so glad you were
alone. Don't forget
Dubuque, Iowa. Oh, and the Dubuque, Iowa, where they had chocolate cake in the room.
I mean, there were also the Iowa caucuses happening, but
yes.
Chocolate cake was there, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very significant time that we were in Dubuque, Iowa. It was the time when we realized, I think, after going to one of those caucuses, you're from Iowa, but I'd never been to one of those caucuses, that Barack Obama was on his way.
Yeah, we got to, you know, the people there in Dubuque were nice enough to let us be silent observers at the caucus that evening. And being 2 days from the coffee shop, blanking on the name of it, the Mud. Oh, I don't want to get it wrong, so I won't say it. But and that was a listener-suggested thing. And then once we took that trip and kind of saw how easy and amazing it was to connect with listeners, from that point on, then it was on to Springfield for Lincoln, because that made sense with you. And then D.C. and doing the studio out of Studio 1A there. And, yeah.
Yeah, we have pictures of all of that. You need to see those. It's Mississippi Mud, Lisa remembered. How did you remember
Mississippi
that?
Mud.
Ain't that so? Oh, we have pictures. We have pictures of that as well, which is great.
You'll have to send me that slideshow.
Okay, yes, yes. You'll get a big kick out of it. You really will. And I wanted to play. I remember when you were able to book both Lily Tomlin, I'm so happy to hear that, and Jane Goodall. You talk about the love that people have for the animals that they work with. And I want you to carry on with that discussion for a moment and tell it through the story, because I want to hear more about this story. I know you've written about it earlier, but the relationship that you had with David Graybeard.
Oh, well, David Graybeard, when I first got to Gombe, all the chimps took one look at this peculiar white ape and ran away. And David, for some reason, you know, they all have different personalities, and he lost his fear before the others. And would wander into my camp when the palm trees were ripe, and one day found some bananas and came to get those. And gradually, because David stopped running away from me, the others sort of stopped and looked and thought, well, she can't be so scary after all. And then came that wonderful day when he actually allowed me to follow him. And I thought I'd lost him, but found him sitting as though waiting for me. Maybe he was. Picked up a ripe palm nut and held it out on my hand, and he turned away. I put my hand closer, and then looking directly into my eyes, he reached out, took the nut, dropped it, and gently reassured me by squeezing my fingers. And so that was a communication, you know, which probably predated words, something that was used by a common ancestor 12 million years ago. Fantastic.
It is fantastic. Yeah. Booked people like that. You booked her. You got to book somebody who is a hero of yours.
I was just going to say, since high school, and I saw her documentary, The People of the Forest, about her work with the chimpanzees in Tanzania's Gombe National Park. That was just one of the many, many great things about our jobs, is actually being able to talk to the individuals who, like, actually directly influence, shape our lives. She was the reason I majored in anthropology in my undergrad. And that was something.
Yeah, that was something. And you've been a big cat lover, too. And I didn't mean to ignore cats. I'm very sorry, Rhonda, because I know you had a cat who you treated like a dog, Hunter, and you lost Hunter this last year, and you have another cat now. But I appreciate cats.
I know you do. I just like giving you a hard time.
I know. I miss you. You were just really so creative, so wonderful. It's wonderful to see you flourishing as you are there in Texas. You're very good, very
Thank
creative.
You. Well, I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for your mentorship. And I'm just happy to have the experience. I don't know where I'd be if you wouldn't have given me that first shot. So thank you, Kathleen. Enjoy your party.
Thanks,
Rhonda. I'm gonna come visit.
Please do. You got to see the puppy. He's
okay,
arriving
I
next
promise.
Tuesday. Okay, thank you. Yeah, we got room
for you. All
right,
bye, Kathleen.
You. Rhonda Fanning, extraordinarily wonderful producer for 7 years. We're going to take one phone call at this point. John, it is in Mason. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
I just want to say how much I'm going to miss you. When I was a kid, I could not go to sleep at night until I heard Doc Severinsen's opening theme to the Johnny Carson show. And then I could sleep. And your voice is so comforting and reassuring that it makes everything seem all right, feel all right. And that's one thing I'm really going to miss.
Oh, John. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll be back to visit.
Well, I'll bring the puppy back at some point. I don't know if I'll be on the air again, but I'll bring the puppy back.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you
and
very
good luck.
Much. That was a lovely call. All right. We're listening also to some of the extraordinary interviews that we've had a chance to have. I thought it was important to hear his words because of all he's going through right now. Senator John McCain was our guest on November 14th of 2014, and the man's a hero in so many regards. The book he was talking about, 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War, 13 Soldiers, A Personal History Recounting the Experiences of One Single American, Soldier, Sailor, Airman, or Marine in each of the 13 major wars our country has fought. I've heard you say that you think we all should read one of the best war books ever written, All Quiet on the Western Front, written in the late 1920s about World War I, in which these very profound questions, let's just get to philosophical here for a moment, because how can you not, are asked about, you know, I've killed somebody, here's my comrade who has a mother who cared about him as much as my mother cared about me. I'm sure you've had these kinds of thoughts go through your mind during the number of years you were a POW or the number of years you were with the Navy. Why can't we realize that that's true and that we need to somehow figure out a way to keep the 14th war from happening?
Well, I think that is a question that has confronted anyone who thinks about civilization and the Western standards and our fundamental philosophies of liberty, freedom, probably best articulated in the French Revolution, which obviously went in the wrong direction, at least for a period of time. The thought that all of us, and as articulated by our founding fathers, are created equal, but and we fight to maintain those rights. But also, there's a glamorization of war that, Kathleen, that is also seems to play a role. Europe, as you know, had been quiet with only minor wars ever since the end of Napoleon Bonaparte, and so when the crisis began, and I recommend to anyone Barbara Tuchman's Guns of August to understand it. Then everybody, it was glorious. It was wonderful. We were going to, you know, make the world safe for democracy, blah, 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 you know, on and on and on. And it was on both sides. God is with us, right. Both sides. And there was this glamorization and of the heroism, and it ended up, of course, wiping out a generation. A generation of young men, British, French, German, other countries as well.
You write in the intro to the book, and take this in terms of your experience or all of the people you've written about, no other experience will ever surpass its effect on their lives, and they can never forget it. No other experience, really?
The birth of a child, the death of a parent, and sometimes and those are the most joyful and most sad. The death of a loved one and the birth of a child, and yet those are sometimes in wrapped up into one on the battlefield. The death of a comrade, escaping a narrow escape from death in oneself. It's the highest and most intense experience one can have to be in an actual battle.
My last hour on the air coming up here, and we're taking a few calls. Let's hear from Senator George McGovern, who joined our show on several occasions. And I love this story. This was from quite a few years ago about helping JFK devise a strategy to win South Dakota farmers during the 1960 presidential campaign. Tell the story. It's a fun story in the book where you're with then Senator Kennedy, who's on a campaign swing, I believe in South Dakota, and he's got to speak to a group of farmers, and he gets it all wrong, and you propose an idea to him, and that's how you later become Director of Food for Peace. But he didn't exactly know how to relate to farmers, and you taught him. I think that's fair to say.
Oh,
you taught him.
I had great affection for John Kennedy, but he would have been the first one to tell you that he didn't know much about the agricultural issues when he first arrived in the White House in early 1961, but he learned fast. And one way, he was out speaking during that campaign to about, I'd say, 10 or 15,000 farmers attending the National Corn Picking Contest near Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And the wind was blowing, it was cold, and he had a speech that somebody had written for him that kept blowing around on the podium. He was trying to hold it down and gesture with the other hand. When we got back on his plane to go to my hometown, Mitchell, South Dakota, he said, "George, what the heck am I going to tell those people? I understand there are 6,000 people jammed into that corn palace in your hometown. What do you think I can do to redeem myself?" I said, "Well, Jack, the first thing I would do is throw away that speech. It's not much good anyway. Get rid of it and just walk out there and say to that family, I believe the farmers of South Dakota and North Dakota and Nebraska and Wisconsin, all these states, I believe they can do more to bring peace in the world than any other group of Americans. If we understand that food is power, food is energy, food is health, food is strength, it can strengthen the world and lead it to freedom and to peace. And if I'm elected president, I'm going to appoint a Food for Peace director to go to the White House and help me use our farm surpluses to wipe out the surplus of hungry stomachs in other parts of the globe." Well, he got elected. He didn't carry South Dakota, but he won by a very narrow margin nationwide. I was defeated that time in my first run for the Senate, and guess who was the first Food for Peace director?
You. I know. I love this story. Let's spend a little bit of time, and you write about it somewhat extensively in the book, Vietnam, which consumed you for a decade until the last soldier left in 1975, you write, "The war in Vietnam was at the top of my mind. My anguish over our continuing involvement in that faraway country was the driving force of my public career." Why was it?
Well, because it was so wrong and mistaken that we had our young men and boys over there in that jungle dying every day, 58,000 of them that died, and several times that many who were wounded in either body or mind and are still suffering from it. I had those boys on my mind, I think, every day for years when I was in the United States Senate trying to end the war. Once in a while, some senator would get up after I had spoken and say, "Well, I want to say to the senator from South Dakota that I'm going to stand with our boys in Vietnam." I said, "Senator, you and I are not standing with those boys. We're here in an air-conditioned Senate chamber. We're surrounded by marble and mahogany desks and furnishings. We've got pages to run our errands for us. We've got our own dining room downstairs. That's not standing with our boys in Vietnam. I personally have been out there two times, and I'm going a third to be with them and to see what they're up against. But, the way to stand with our men in time of war is not only to give them the benefits that they're entitled to when the war ends, but also to be sure that we've committed them wisely when we send them out to risk their lives. And that's what I pled for in Vietnam. I was always with our troops, and I thought the best favor I could do them was to end that war that threatened life for so many of them.
Senator George McGovern and Senator John McCain before that. We're reminiscing. There have been tens of thousands of interviews over, of course, 25 years, and I've been in radio for almost 44 years now, if you can believe that. So we have gleaned a few interviews that were particularly meaningful and really are interviews that will last for the ages, actually. Coming up next hour, we'll hear from Maya Angelou, and we will have Scotty Myers with us, a wonderful producer, and we'll have more listener comments. Many thanks this hour. Samantha Greener did a whole lot of listening to old shows, and thank her so much for coming up with these clips and editing them. That all takes a whole lot of time. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian and to Samantha for the party, the ongoing party. It's going to continue after 3 o'clock with chocolate cake, of course. Thanks to Gretchen Brown. Thanks to Colleen Leahy for producing the shows. Rhonda Fanning, thanks to Rhonda. Great years with her. And Jack Mitchell, thank you, Jack Mitchell. I wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for Jack Mitchell. Don't know where I'd be. Raising dogs, I reckon, somewhere. That career would have started. News is coming up in just a moment. You could say it on the air, too. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network, and it's my final hour on the air after 24 years and 1 month and 10 days. And I'm going to miss you, and I'm going to miss the guests. I am going to read a whole lot about extraordinary presidents, and I'm going to raise a puppy. I've always wanted to do this, to be a therapy dog. And life will go on. But it's been extraordinary, and I can't thank enough all of the people who have, you know, I'm delighted to speak with wonderful producers. Scotty will be joining us this hour. KP will join us this hour, who created really compelling radio. And to you, people who have listened, and we're trying to weave some calls in this hour and listen to some people who are worth remembering forever. Maya Angelou, of course, is one of them, and we'll hear from Maya in a moment. We did our fair share of Abraham Lincoln stories, which was okay because I found the dog audience and I found the Abraham Lincoln audience. You guys were mine, and we went and traveled many roads together talking about dogs and talking about Abraham Lincoln. We're taking a few listener calls as well, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. So before we go to Maya and her beautiful voice and words, let's take a couple calls. And Don in Milwaukee is calling in. Hi, Don.
Hi, Kathleen. That's wonderful.
Oh, Don Richards.
I went on a trip with you to Springfield, Illinois, to see the Lincoln memorabilia there, and it was just a moving experience, and I want to thank you. I have a picture of you and me plastered on my refrigerator, and it greets me every morning.
Oh, Don. You were a great traveling person on those trips, and I know I've known you for many, many years, and I'm glad you enjoyed them. We connected on that. We've connected with a lot of history and trying to make the world a little better, huh?
Yeah, it certainly was, and it topped off my career as an alderman, and then anything else I did since then, I still focus it around people like you.
Thank you, Don.
It's wonderful.
I'm getting before you go, my therapy puppy is arriving on Tuesday. Can we come visit you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
At Alexian Village, we have plenty of people that need therapy and therapy dogs.
Excellent. All right. You'll be very close to the top of my list. I'll get there. I promise. Thank you, Don. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll take more phone calls during the hour, but I do want to hear from Maya Angelou, her voice, her poetry, the life she led. If you haven't read about her life, do so. It was extraordinary and such humanity. In 2008, she graced our microphone discussing her book, Letter to My Daughter. Maya, let's talk about, and these are hard to talk about. I bet you it was painful for you to write about that absolute jerk who beat you up and almost killed you and your mother finding you. Oh, that you had to go through that. What a horrible, horrible event.
Terrible.
Ugh.
It made me so scared for so long.
Mm.
But, you know, and fortunately, it never made me bitter. Bitterness is very dangerous. It's like cancer.
Mm.
It does nothing to the object of the bitterness. I mean, the way it's like cancer is it eats upon the host. And so I will not entertain it. I will not give it a perch in my mind or in my body. But as I told you, I will protest.
Right.
And I think everybody has the right to defend herself, himself, against abuse of any sort. Sometimes there's the verbal abuse. And people will say, I didn't mean that. Or I didn't think this would hurt you. One of the ways I prevent it is when a person says to me, I hope this won't, you won't take this wrong. I say, please don't tell me, because I will take it wrong. Don't
right.
do it.
Right.
Because that's just a sly way and a cowardly way of saying, I'm going to hit you, but I don't want you to hit back.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So don't be insulted by this. I say, I'm already insulted, so stop it. And we really have to have the right. We have the right. We have to make use of the right to protect ourselves in our own defense.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't defend myself, how can I ask someone else to defend me? My grandmother died 56 years ago.
Hmm.
She is real to me. And again, back to when we were talking about charity, my grandmother used to say, sister, when you get to give, when you learn, teach, and you know what's right, do right. It's so simple. I mean, it seems so simple, but it's so profound to
do it
and try to be it all the time. But that was my grandmother. And that's, I have a painting of about eight women sitting on fold-up chairs. And there's one empty chair. I've taken that painting all over the world with me. I was at 20th Century Fox as their first black female producer director. I've taken it to Europe. I took it to Africa. Because I think of that empty chair as Mama's chair.
Oh.
And if I have any question about what is the right thing to do, the honorable thing, I look at that chair. And I can almost hear my grandmother say, now, sister, you know what's right. And many times, if I was going to say something unkind or say something without thinking it through, I do what West African women, especially in Ghana, they put their thumb and forefinger together and hold the lips, and they say, hold your weapon.
Hold your weapon.
Hold your weapon.
Hi, Margie.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello to Maya Angelou. I'm going to break down in tears.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you.
Please have a laugh, too. Have a that's it, yes.
I'm sorry?
I wanted to hear you laugh as well.
Oh. And you've helped me laugh. I've read the stories about your grandmother, and I've read so many things that you've written, and I've had... issues. My husband left me 18 years ago with four children, and I've had a difficult road, and I just listening to you, and like Kathleen said, your voice is so warm and so nurturing. I've gone to the library to get your books on tape, and I will listen to them in the car, especially like on a road trip to Indiana to go home to see my mom. And I would be listening to you on the way, and I'd be laughing and crying, and you just gave me strength to go on.
I'm so glad. That's grand to hear.
I have a beautiful card I found. I can't describe the flower, but it's peachy orange on the front, and it has your writing on it. It says, I can be changed by what happens to me, but I refuse to be reduced by it.
Exactly.
And I bought two of them.
Smart woman.
Maya Angelou, another story I must tell, I've told this before to some people, that she was on several times. And once it was a book about her grandmother, and she... a young woman called in about this other young woman's age, and she was about to have her grandmother had raised her. Her mother wasn't in her life, and her grandmother was about her grandmother had died, and she was about to, the young woman, get married the following weekend. And she was talking about how she didn't know how she could carry on with this without her grandmother in the audience. And Maya listened to her and offered, of course, her beautiful words of wisdom. And then she said to us, she said, put her on hold, will you for a moment? And so we did. And after the show, she personally talked to the young woman, got her address, and sent her a wedding present, which, you know, was a measure of who she was. She, marvelous woman. And a voice that should always stay alive. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is my last 45 minutes on the air after all of these years. It's pretty astounding. Great producers are joining me. K.P. Whaley is joining me, a man of just an enormously good heart, incredible radio sense, and he is now, I imagine him all the time. He sent a picture of rolling down Lazy River in North Carolina on an inner tube, which I used to do in North Carolina as well. And I thought, oh, this looks like heaven. He's general manager of 103.3 Asheville FM. It's a station in Asheville, North Carolina. And he was a producer here for over 5 years. And before that was news talk director for the community station WORT in Madison and a station manager for another station in Asheville. Hello, KP.
Hello, Kathleen.
Oh,
it's so nice to hear your voice.
And it is to hear yours. I miss you so much. I really do.
The feeling is very mutual, Kathleen, and I am just thrilled to be on in your last 45 minutes. It's pretty amazing that you played the Maya Angelou clip, because so it began for me in my first week with you. Maya was one of our first guests that week, and I thought, wow, exactly where I want to be.
I'm with you. I didn't want to be anywhere else either. And you book some extraordinary people. But more than that, you and I, and then later Scotty, we have a whole series of slides that Lisa and Samantha have put together, and I can't tell you how many slides there are. You'll know what I'm about to say. Where we were wearing the same colors, we had the same pants on and the same shirts, and it's just extraordinary. We would come into work every day, and we could finish each other's sentences, couldn't we?
Oh yes, yeah. We had an amazing collective mind, I think, that just
yes.
was always kind of working, and I think that proved well in the types of shows that we were able to book, simply because we didn't have to spend a lot of time, hashing through whether I thought that you'd like this show or what, like this guest. I think there was an inherent trust because we had that same mind.
Absolutely, there was. And you always had this generosity about you and this ability to see, actually, more than I do, actually. I can be pretty strong-headed about certain issues, as you well know, and certainly my family knows. But they're all like they say we're all the same. We're all kind of bullheaded. But you had a chance to talk to people and to see all points of view, which I so appreciated, that you always saw the value in what people had to say and what different opinions there were, and partially because of the way that you grew up and partially by the way that you treat human beings, that there's a dignity you bestow on them, which is a very good thing. I thank you for it.
Thank you, and I'm glad to have contributed to your show in that way, because I feel like we really did cover a lot of issues from multiple perspectives, and we gave people something to think about, whether they agreed with the guests or the topic or not. We certainly gave them information, and that's why I got in this business, and I think that's why you did as well.
Absolutely. So tell me all about what you're doing. Our listeners want to know, and they ask, what's happened to everybody? You're now station manager, and it's a perfect job, I think, for you, KP. You should always have been a station manager.
It's suiting me pretty well right now.
Is it?
I must say. Yeah.
Good.
I manage a low-power FM station here in Asheville, and LPFM is 100 watts versus, 10,000 watts. And yet that doesn't at all distract from our ability to reach the entire region of Asheville. So our listening range is just as much as the full-power stations. So I think we benefit, actually, from being an LPFM. I have over 100, maybe 100 volunteers
Woo!
That come in each week and put together programming for us. I think we have 60 shows on the air, pretty much in from 7 a.m. until 2 a.m. We have a live DJ or program host. So it's been just phenomenal to get to know everyone in the station who's been doing the good work that they have been and really helping sort of amplify who we are in Asheville. And so I'm putting a lot of my past skills to work, as well as many of the ones that I've learned working with you.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd come and volunteer with you if I lived in Asheville, but I don't.
I think I would definitely encourage that.
I would do that. Well, I need to come and visit. And once my puppy, you know, I'm getting a puppy, once he gets a little bit more grown, we're going to take a nice road trip and come down and visit y'all.
That sounds great, and I'm sure my puppy would love to meet you.
I know. I want to meet your puppy, too. See, everybody, we were saying this earlier, everybody we've hired here has loved dogs. And somehow I think we never asked that question explicitly, do you love dogs? But everybody who's worked here has loved dogs, so that says something about us. You booked both of these shows, and for me, as you well know, KP, without a doubt, Abraham Lincoln is worth every single moment of the attention that we have given him, and I will spend, I have 100 books at least on Abraham Lincoln, and I'll spend many hours continuing to read about him. And a highlight of my direct time with listeners was riding the buses with you to Springfield, Illinois, Gettysburg, and Washington. We just had the best time. And you booked two marvelous guests for us. And we, I remember, learned the Gettysburg Address together. Remember that, KP?
Yeah, we did, and we recorded it, put it on YouTube. I think it's still there.
Is it on? Y'all have to look at that. I'm so steeped in memories. You booked, I know, two people. Tell us if these were big bookings for you as well. Doris Kearns Goodwin and also Ken Burns.
Yeah, absolutely. And both of those were amazing bookings. And Ken was such a coincidence and just happened. And I was so pleased because I knew working frantically trying to get you a Lincoln show for, I believe it was his assassination.
Yes, it was.
That I wanted to get the best guest that I could. And luckily, Ken had just come out with his film on the Gettysburg Address. And
not a bad booking, I'd say,
yeah.
KB. The best guess I could. And yeah, so was Ken Burns. It was good. Here's Ken Burns. I must tell you, I absolutely adore Abraham Lincoln and finally had a chance to go to Gettysburg with a group of listeners 2 years ago now. And I wept like a baby when I stood at the spot where Abraham Lincoln delivered that address to it. There is the whole era, the magnificence of the man and the power of the words. As you say, they are poetry. They're just so carefully chosen, so incredibly important. And here you are getting thousands and thousands of people to memorize it all these years later.
Yeah, you know, Abraham Lincoln has a special place in my heart, as in yours. I think he's our best president. He is remarkable. It was said of Theodore Roosevelt, who we've just finished a big series on, will be out in September. It was said that he had distance in his eyes. But I actually think it's Abraham Lincoln who had distance in his eyes. You think about this short address. The first sentence, 47 years ago, is about the past. The second sentence, now we are engaged in a great civil war, is about the present. But the rest of it is Lincoln pulling us into a hopeful future, a democratic future where we really do believe that all men are created equal. He's not only doubling down on the Declaration, he's giving us a Declaration of Independence 2.0, an operating system that we still use today.
Mm-hmm.
That's the source of your tears. Your tears are not of sentimentality or nostalgia. They're of the higher emotions our founders, including Thomas Jefferson, thought would eventually be unleashed by a people governing themselves.
Right.
And I think what Lincoln did coming in the next second or third generation was to finally give full voice to what our potential was, what we could be as a nation.
That's the other part of this history. I mean, to hold the country together during this incredibly difficult, horrendous time, brothers killing brothers and the North against the South, it's hard to imagine it, even though it wasn't all that long ago. And then another tragedy, the man who has been able to accomplish that, to be assassinated. You know, it just sort of takes your breath away.
Well, Shelby Foote, when we were working on the editing of the film and struggling with the very complex narrative, as you can imagine, called me up and just said, remember, God is the greatest dramatist. You know, mm-hmm. here's somebody who finds out on the 9th that he's won the war, that the opposing general, Robert E. Lee, has surrendered, and 5 days later sort of feels like, wow, I can exhale and go to the theater. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't make it. Yeah. From there, it's the bittersweet aspect of this whole life. And yet, as his great rival and later friend, the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, said as they closed his eyes early in the morning, just after 7 o'clock on the 15th, in the boarding house across the street, now he belongs to the ages. And I think that's what we're talking about right now, Kathleen and Nancy, that Lincoln has somehow achieved a kind of immortality few mortals have ever achieved, mm-hmm. Because in part the irony of being cut short, I suppose, in the way Jack Kennedy, but I think more in the sense of his just sheer greatness as a human being and his being able to contain the contradictions and understand where we were going as a people.
Ken Burns and KP Whaley is joining me. He's now in North Carolina. He's station manager, general manager of 103.3 Asheville AM, a community radio station. And he's in a great setting. He's got dogs and animals, and he's doing work with a lot of volunteers and creating great radio. I'm sure I haven't seen KP in a long time, and he's joining us. Were there certain shows, KP, that you mentioned, you know, getting Ken Burns, you know, which was a big booking. Were there certain shows, and they not necessarily had to be big names, that you were terribly excited to put together?
There were a couple of shows that I have a good memory of that I was proud to put together for you. One had to do with co-housing, which I really enjoyed that one because it was also a new topic for you. And so,
right.
It kind of opened up this new way of thinking about how we live, and we got a really good response on it, I recall. So I was excited to bring that sort of, you know, a little more grassroots topics to public radio. And then another one that I just was thinking about the other day had to do, I think we had some AIDS activists on from New York who were doing work around the drug Truvada, which at the time no one knew
yes.
much about. And
yes.
now everyone knows that it's a pretty much a 99% effective preventative drug that, you know, gay men can take.
You did some extraordinary work. Plus, do you want to say hi to Scotty? Scotty's right next to me now,
Scotty.
Too. Scotty and KP.
I miss you tremendously.
I miss you. What color are we all wearing today?
Oh, we should have done that. I didn't even think about that. I've got this dress I got at a resale shop in Port Washington for $1. And it's pretty fancy, don't you think?
It looks at least 100.
I feel like $100 too. Yeah, we used to wear the same things to work. It was extraordinary. No, we didn't do that today. Scotty's wearing a white shirt and what color pants are those?
Yeah.
And Doc's side of
the official color
shoes?
Is ugly.
Right.
What are you wearing, KP?
I wear shorts and jeans now all the time.
You wear shorts?
Shorts and jeans all the time.
Do you? Yeah. Well, I wish we could all have created, we've already done radio together, but I wish we were all actually there with you in Asheville, North Carolina for a while.
That
would be okay, KP. Going along.
It would be okay with me as well. Yeah. We're working on developing a podcast studio here for our community, so if we can get that going, maybe we all can be on the radio.
Yeah, we'll bring Daniel Golden down as well.
Perfect.
Wonderful. There's certain people you work with, and you know it's the best, and it was with you and Scotty. We're going to talk to Scotty in a moment, and with Rhonda as well. It was an honor to work with you, KP, and to know you, and we'll stay friends.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think we certainly were more than colleagues, and I would always consider you a dear friend.
Yeah, me, same here. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Whaley, our producer for 5 years. He was a good, good soul. We're taking phone calls, too. I'm in my last half hour now, and we'll hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, I imagine, down the road. We're taking some listener calls because it's important for me to have farewells with you as well, because I must tell you, and I'll repeat this, I said it the first hour, but, you know, I just had to take a deep breath because I've had so hundreds and hundreds of cards from people and email messages and moments that have touched you because of the people we've heard from and the people who have touched all of us. And we heard it together, and it stayed with you, and it's been a privilege to be able to do that. I never could have done it without KP and without Rhonda and without Scotty and without Colleen and without Gretchen. They're the people who put all this together, really. I just read a lot. Let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-SCOTTY. Oh, Scotty, you're laughing. 800-486-8655 is our number. And let's go to Boyd. I've talked to Boyd many times over the years in St. Francis. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, first of all, nothing but the best to you. And what you're doing with your puppy, that's just so great. I have a cat that snuggles up with me, but hey, I grew up with both of them, so I don't have.
Yeah.
They're all great. I loved the shows that you did with Nancy Pearl. It's like you got to have your notebook with you, and
right.
You can't keep up with what she is going to be saying and stuff like that. And you know, before you know it, it's like, boy, did I get them all? Do you have to archive it? I mean, and you find out there, oh, I didn't know about that one, so that was great, but. I remember when you interviewed, and sadly, she's no longer with us anymore, Elizabeth Edwards. And I remember seeing her during the 2004 campaign where she spoke at the Bayview Community Center. And she was just such a wonderful, yes. down-to-earth, yet charismatic woman. And, you know, when you interviewed her, this was, you know, albeit before everything, you know, that happened with John Edwards and what have you, and then with her passing on. But, I always thought she was just someone that really tried to, you know, give us hope and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, we still need that, even with, you know, with the time we're living in right now, which a lot of people are very concerned about.
Yeah, thank you, Boyd, so much. And I think that our producers have been able to pull some of that interview, which is astounding, before we hear from Elizabeth Edwards. And what you say is true, because I know she visited hospitals too, and I know people who worked with her when she was visiting the hospitals, and she was a genuine, lovely, caring person. Nancy Pearl and I are going to be at Boswell Books. You mentioned her on September 9 at 7 o'clock. Nancy's written a novel, and we did an event years together. And now we're going to talk about a novel and a book about books. So if you want to come to listeners, it's September 9. And it's at 7 o'clock. It's a Saturday night at Boswell. You can get a cup of coffee next door. Daniel's always entertaining. He will you laugh.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
And Nancy will be great. So we will be there. So here is a portion of that interview. Boyd, all the best to you. Good to hear from you over the years. Elizabeth
Thank
Edwards.
You.
Hello, Elizabeth Edwards.
It's great to be back with you.
Yeah, I had such a good time with you. And when I heard the news, it just, gal darn it, just stunned me, because you've been through it. You've been through it. You know, you need a long life that's pain-free, and we don't always get what we want,
well,
right?
From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I like that. But you're doing okay. You sound good.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. I've been doing... One thing is that I've been trying to lose weight because the weight's bad for cancer, as it turns out.
Hmm.
Not just for photographs; it's also bad for cancer. And so I've had to go through my closet. So I've been doing a lot of closet cleaning. So it's actually nice to be on the phone instead of in my closet.
That made my day. That really did. Okay.
That made my day. That's, yeah, that boy, I could say that a lot too. That made my day, and then the days go by, and then the years go by, and then you have to say goodbye, because we all have to do this. If you want to know why I'm retiring now, so let me tell you. A couple things happened. One is I've always wanted to, you know, from the number of dogs we've had in the studio that and therapy dogs, that I've always wanted to. I've been very touched by that. And I've always wanted to raise a therapy dog. So my old dog, Murphy, who Scotty met, who came to the station, and Scotty did a video of him, which was great. He died in June, and I couldn't bring a puppy in while he was still alive. So I started looking after he died, and you were very generous with your sympathy for him. I went online and found this breed and found a puppy, and he was going to be available in August. And I thought, I got to do it. You know, if there's certain things you want to do in your life, then you've got to find time while you still have time to do those things. And that's why I'm retiring at this moment. So we're taking a couple phone calls, and then Scotty Myers will join me in a moment. Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
How is this possible that you are, it's the day.
I know, Marty.
A month ago, it seemed like it would never get here, and now it is.
It's here. I know.
Well, all the best to you. I mean, really, I just bought a friend of mine a bumper sticker that says, don't postpone joy. And, I really hope that that's what you're doing here. Just two quick things. I'm trying to figure out where I heard this quote from Abraham Lincoln, and you're the only person I can think of that might have had a show. I love this.
I'm the only one I know.
I love this quote. He said, your argument is as thin as a homeopathic broth made from the shadow of a pigeon that died of starvation.
Oh, my gosh. He said that?
Yes. I can't imagine where else I heard it if it wasn't on one of your shows.
It must have been. Nobody else does those kinds of shows.
Yeah. And my favorite dog memory of a show that you had, somebody brought in their dog, and I don't know, you were chatting with the guest, and at one point you went, I'm just going to kiss your dog on the nose. And you went, gave it a big kiss. And I thought, oh, my God, I love this woman. It was so great. So happy trails to you.
Thank you,
All
Marty.
The best.
Thanks so much.
Be well. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to find joy kissing that puppy on the nose. I'm going to do that all the time. Deacon in Sheboygan. Hi, Deacon.
Well, happy retirement. I just wanted to quickly tell you what my radio relationship with you has meant to me. Whether I've been in a business meeting, a family dinner with my very opinionated family, or with a bunch of strangers, you have been the one that has made me the smartest man in that room.
Oh,
Thank you so much.
I like that, Deacon. That's why we did our homework.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, Deacon. When I think about the wealth of information. I mean, that's a long time to be on the air, 24 years, and we never did fluffy kinds of shows. They were all kind of, some of them were really heavy, you know, and substantial, but we all learned so much. It was like going to school all the time. It was just good. Scotty Myers is joining us now in studio. Scotty is my boy. He's great. And, what a time we had together. He is enormously talented, and he didn't know it when he walked in here. He just didn't realize, I don't think, how special he is and how smart he is, and has a real feel for the city of Milwaukee and for many of the problems, and people who are trying to address those problems in Milwaukee, and brought voices to the microphone, much as Studs Terkel did, Scotty, who I know is a hero of yours as well, people who are not celebrated and who need to be heard, and we heard them. He has now moved on. He's a TV producer, and the first thing he produced made it to PBS NewsHour, by golly, for Milwaukee PBS, and we'll have him talk about that. But I miss you, buddy. I miss you.
I miss you, too. Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I think we're all doing a lot of reflecting right now. And, of course, you started your radio career 24 years ago, to borrow a term from a certain president. I was thinking, you know, one of our great interviews was with Marilyn Robinson, amazing author.
Yes, yes, I forgot about that.
You gifted me Gilead, the first book in her important trilogy that went on to really inform and influence President Barack Obama's ability to govern the nation. And I was just reading through some of the quotes, and I'm reminded of all this because just today, just sitting here and listening to your theme music for the first time, needless to say, I'm feeling a lot of things right now, and I can't imagine what you're feeling. And there's this quote in Gilead, and it's, it all means more than I can tell you, so you must not judge what I know, but what I find the words for. I think a lot of people are feeling, we don't have the words to express to you what 44 years of public service has meant to us. And, you know, of course, we're celebrating your years here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and public radio is near and dear to my heart, but also an acknowledgement to your radio career before that. You know, you did a lot of important shows at other stations in this area, and that needs to be acknowledged, and a tip of the hat to you. And I think about when you go to a theater production or a concert, what you do when you're just so inspired by a great performance. What everyone at the end kind of gives a standing ovation. So I'm gonna stand up.
Sweet.
For your 44 years on the air, it's you've been a friend and a mentor to me, and of course we're going to hear throughout this hour and throughout your, you know, your time here about how meaningful you've been to people. So thank you.
You know, when you think about it, I've been doing a lot of thinking about it. It's amazing I lasted all this time, you know? I mean, this is a long time, A, to be in radio, and B, to do some pretty, you know, how many shows are done about Abraham Lincoln at least, you know, seven times a year, or how many shows on presidential history, or the people that you brought to the air that nobody ever hears, you know, very, very rarely.
Well,
it makes a difference. It's a good thing to, it's a good way to have spent your life.
I don't think people are surprised. I mean, we heard Jack Mitchell before say that he's not surprised you lasted this long, because people recognize the talent in you right away. I was talking to Jack before I came in here, and we were saying how other news outlets that aren't Wisconsin Public Radio, they kind of feel like junk food. But like a Wisconsin Public Radio diet, this show is just, it's an entree, it's a side dish, and it's dessert. It's all these things. You know, we talk about all things political on Monday. We do deep stories about refugee, and we do things about space. All these things, you know, it's everything. And you've lended voice to that and amplified voices that don't get heard or vulnerable in our society. And together we all lend a hand and lift, and the load gets lighter.
Well, you found your way in doing that as well, and I'm so proud of the work that you've done. You're just you're the best kind of journalist. And when I think about, we brought Muhib Dyer on the air a couple days ago, who you discovered young campaign, and all the young men and the communities who are dealing with violence and death and guns and all of that, and trying to make this substantial difference. And you've identified all those people, and you have a real gift. And by golly, you had so much enthusiasm to be able to go to work every day and laugh as much as we did, and be able to just delve into politics and you know, Marilyn Robinson, for heaven's sake. We just go off on these. They're not really tangents. They're just, wow, I discovered this, I discovered that. Was what a joy.
But we were just talking before how you can feel like a thief in the night sometimes, because you spend these hours with people. And that was okay. So I'm reflecting on Studs Terkel, and he says this about his career, and I'm guessing this is going to resonate with you. It was the daily experience of others, their private hurts, real or fancied, that I was probing. In Lansing, an especially absent Boyle, it is not the doctor who experiences the pain. I was no more than a wayfaring stranger, taking much and giving little. In other words, we sort of parachute in these people's lives for an hour. We probe and we ask them and we learn, and it changes us. But then tomorrow we had to talk about another topic, and it's weird to go from one thing to the next. It leaves you with this strange feeling, but I don't know. There's something there about that.
Well, that's when you retire, and then you can listen to all of them, which is what I've been doing. You're making me cry now. All right, you did this thing. We need to laugh for a while. You taped, you sneaky guy. You taped what? Me making a mistake?
I mean, there was very few opportunities to do such a thing, but when you did, I capitalized.
I know, and I hope you'll forgive my language. I can't even believe that I said some of the things I said. They weren't words you can't say, because we wouldn't play those, but I guess I do every now and then.
You're a sassy lass.
I guess I was sassy.
Yeah.
So you put these on a tape.
Yeah, so what happens is before each of the shows, we go into Studio A and we record a little, we call it billboard, and essentially that's jargon for, we record a minute-long promotion of what you're about to hear at the top of the hour so that you know what we're talking about. And once in a while, you might fumble a word, or you might have a you might have a donut stuck in your throat. I don't know. Something happens, and, you know, so we put together a little blooper reel over the years, I think, is what's happening here.
Here it is. Coincidences this hour. No, coincidences this hour. This hour, coincidence, sorry. Oh, darn, I better do that again. As part of WPR's Wisconsin Vote fall election coverage, we bring you special edition, special convention, right to the top, we gotta go again. He said to have had the eye of Norman Rockwell and the soul of Quentin Tarantino. Bent, as ISIS loses ground in the region but strikes out abroad. Martin Guest. Martin Guest is our Smith for tonight.
I like that.
Too damn much.
Oh, I got you on tape saying it. You said too damn much, and I got it out here.
Scotty. Switched from a caucus system to a more inclusive presidential primary, is also considering. God darn it! I didn't think that was going to happen. Millions of Americans have criminal records, even if they've never. I just changed this and then I didn't. Senator George Mitchell is with us. His mother, father, and Edmund Mess. Oh, shoot!
So close and so far.
How was my time? It seemed especially evident after Donald Trump's fractured the GOP, leading scores of high-ranking Republicans to refuse to support their party's candidate. Boy, was that a miss. Oh, shoot!
Boy, was that a miss.
Hello. Coffee cake in my throat.
Welcome to Country. Can I see
it was a stunning moment for a country that's often seen as failing. Lo siento. As it turns out, our resting metabolism radically slows when losing huge amounts of weight. One research called... Suspension and expulsion rates have doubled over the past... They doubled? Ooh, that sounds good. Doesn't it? We're still laughing. Was that, did I say, you said that. Is that a milkshake? Boy, was that a milkshake.
Lisa better get ready with that profanity button. Wow.
I let some language go, didn't I? Oh, God, that was funny. I had no idea you kept a tape like that. So tell me, you did a lot of extraordinary production work. What shows were you particularly in love with?
So, you know, you and I are the same mind. We love politics and sort of the same themes in, that run through our culture. You know, you just interviewed David Axelrod.
Yes.
So I like that, you know, your John Dickersons, your Molly Balls, your David Frums, your Maureen Dowds, Nicholas Kristof, and, of course, Frank Delaney. Those are all very important interviews to me. But for whatever reason, there's something about the voices from right here in Milwaukee that, I don't know, I just found them more, again, it goes back to that stud circle thing about celebrating the ordinary, you know, elevating common folks and our own back, you know, if you want to change the world, you kind of start in your own backyard. And, you know, through your interviews, we were able to learn about places and learn about people that we could not, where we could not go to and learn about. And I think some of my favorite shows have been with, I think first on the list is Paul Gale. He was this.
Oh, I remember that.
And he was with his little baby at the time, Sapphire, and she came in. And I love it for a couple of reasons. For one, this is a guy who would never be on a radio for a full hour, first of all. And he's this 18-year-old. He graduated. He's half Indian-American, half African-American. And he struggled in the north side of Milwaukee with finding employment, getting transportation issues. So we were able to talk about all these issues with his life wrapped up in that. Segregation, gun violence. And then there was also the format that I really struck a chord with me, because you had little baby Sapphire sitting on your lap and you interrupt the show to put her on your lap and to give her a kiss. And, you know, it's just like... It was something about the informality of it all. Like, you were just sitting down and having coffee with Paul, and we were learning about his life.
And he walked here, didn't he?
I think, yes.
With a baby carriage.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it just goes to show the dedication. And I think he changed a lot of people's minds. I think a lot of people left that show thinking,
yes.
Oh, this is what the experience is like for someone
yes.
who might be on the north side of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most rewarding to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big show. Our show, Tarif Bakhdash was...
talk about him. That was
oh
incredible.
Oh, my God. So he was... I think he was at a local hospital. I don't want to say which one because I'm not sure and I don't want to give wrong facts. But he was a pediatrician here working in the neurology field. And he's from Syria. He went to medical school with Assad. And he and many Syrians really felt Assad was going to be a progressive force in Syrian politics until we know what happened there, sadly. But he led all these refugee trips to Jordan with the Journal Sentinel and other groups, and he just told us some of the most heartwarming stories about what everyday Syrians are experiencing. So heartwarming, in fact, that our listeners submitted a pile of clothes.
I know.
Little baby clothes to bring back to Syria. So somewhere in Syria, there's little kids, you know, probably wearing a Wisconsin Badgers hoodie or, you know what I mean? It's just... he's sadly he moved to Mississippi. He's no longer living in, and you know, you stay in touch with these people, and you, especially on Facebook, and you sort of are able to get this weird snapshot of their lives, and you wish they were in closer proximity because those are the kinds of people we need in the city to
absolutely.
So those are a couple. Kim Motley, the amazing lawyer from Milwaukee, who is like the only Westerner who is allowed to litigate in Afghanistan. She has to navigate Afghan's constitution and the Sharia law. She's the only person to get a presidential pardon after, you know, oftentimes in Sharia law.
Incredible person.
If a woman gets raped, she's found guilty, and she's really transforming the legal system there. And she's from right here in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And the young woman, we won't have time for the clip. We'll take a couple calls and then try to play this. And I think about her so much right now with North Korea in the news.
That's right.
I hope that things turn out. I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
And she escaped from North Korea and wound up marrying a friend of yours.
Yeah, Hansa Lee. And she wrote this book about defecting from North Korea and her heroic story. And small world, she married someone I grew up with in Brookfield. And... now she's like on the TED stage and attending all these national conferences with all kinds of folks. So her story's getting out there, and so thank God.
Yeah. Can we play just a little bit of that so we can hear her voice? If you haven't read her book, it's a good thing to do. Scotty found her. Let's go back to when you were a teenager and you decided to walk across the ice to leave North Korea.
Growing up in North Korea, I learned North Korea is the most greatest country in the world, and then we are happiest human being, and we are privileged by having the dear leaders, which it was a dictator. I didn't know at the time. And then we learned many horrible things about the outside world, although we didn't learn many things about outside world, but we learned those countries we have bad relationships, like America or Japan or South Korea. So we learned many hostile things about America. We are considered Americans not as a normal human being because we, in North Korea, everywhere we go, there's pictures hang. There's posted pictures on the wall about all ugly American soldiers' pictures. And then we just all on the picture, we just stabbing them with our pencils those kind of pictures. So we learned, also, they are colonizing South Korea even these days, and then executing South Korean students. And then South Koreans are living as slaves under their, you know, imperialists. So, I mean, what kind of human being can do even these days, you know? That's why we thought we must kill them off.
Mm.
Yeah. And then, I saw from the media all the foreigners, visitors to Pyongyang, they're bowing to their statues, to dear leader's statues, and then, you know, bowing to the dear leader and then giving them flowers. So I thought exactly it was true what I learned from North Korean government. You know, all foreigners respect our dear leaders, so why not us? That's why for me, you know, even in North Korea, everywhere, even in our homes, I mean, in public places, even in our homes, we hang their pictures on the wall. We have to choose the best wall in the house. And
there were some extraordinary interviews, and I'll go back and listen to some of them in my retirement. On Tuesday, I'll be getting my 10-week-old puppy. He's a Portuguese water dog, Finn, and I hope to train him as a therapy dog. I'm so excited. I brought his picture into the studio with me so I wouldn't cry too much, because I wanted to remember that I have something to look forward to on Tuesday. I also have a picture of a Hawaiian monk seal who's been around for 13 million years, who will also grace the studio so I could remember how long some animals are with us and how important it is to do some things that so the Earth will still be around 13 million years from now. It's been an honor to be with you. It has been an extraordinary career. I've been so lucky. I just kind of chanced into radio a long, long time ago, and I've just been blessed to be here for so many years and to have such a rewarding life. As I said during her first hour, people have been celebrating me, and the moments that have remained with many of us over the years on Facebook. I've had all kinds of messages, hundreds and hundreds of messages in the last month or so, and I thank you for each and every one of them. And I know we never met each other, and it's kind of an isolated thing that I do here, but all of a sudden I realized that you were out there and you were listening and you were touched, as I was, by all of the remarkable moments that we've had. So I mean it. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here. Let's take a couple more phone calls. Let's go to Tom and Barbara in Shawano.
Yes, Kathleen. My wife and I really appreciate the balance you bring. I certainly appreciate when you interviewed David K. Johnston several times, but I'm here to bring memories. We're a young college woman flying over the interchanges and telling where the backups on the freeways were. And a Sunday morning show, which had always
make a joyful noise
on St. Patty's Day. Of course, there was not always religious songs, but they were all. And I really appreciate it, and I wish you well.
Thank you so much. You've listened for a long time. I remember giving out dollar bills when I was dressed as a leprechaun at shopping centers in Milwaukee, and people didn't believe it was real. I said, no, it's real. It's a real dollar bill. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Please take it. Thank you. Thanks very much to Lisa and Albandian. Thanks to Scotty Myers and to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning so much for being longtime producers. I'm really sorry I didn't get to spend more time with Gretchen Brown and Colleen Leahy, and I wish them all the best. Thanks to Samantha Greener, and thanks to Katie and Adam.